What are you up to?
What am I up to? These days or just right now?
These days.
These days. A lot of conversations. A lot of conversations. I think when you're a contractor, especially someone looking for work, it's a lot of conversations with people trying to figure out if like their company's a right fit or just seeing what they're up to. And maybe like they'll make a connection for you that will lead to like your next contract. But then also a lot of conversations for Sound Off, which is this nonprofit I started. And so,
like, okay, let's tackle Sound Off right off the top.
Okay.
Because if anybody gets bored of me asking you questions, I want them to at least have heard about Sound Off.
I appreciate
that. No, I really do. No, Sound Off is awesome. So, it's an organization that aims to help further the cause of accessibility in conferences and the community at large. Is that a fair summary?
Oh, I love that summary. The one I typically use is to increase access marginalized people in tech have to professional spaces. And to that end, we've started with conferences. But I love the accessibility angle because I think a lot of times people want to know what marginalized means, or they might assume that it's like sort of a one type. Like maybe we're focusing on women or focusing on minorities and women. But I mean, we do things like American Sign Language interpreters and live captioning. Like we are really focused on accessible conferences and things that everyone can enjoy.
Yeah, it's in a way, it's a shame that the word accessibility has been or implies a way to provide service to people who may not have like an for lack of a better word, like a normative sensory input.
Mm-hmm.
But it just means inclusiveness, right? Like let's cast the net as wide as possible and encourage anybody and everybody to be part of this and to join in and to contribute.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what exactly, like what are the concrete things that Sound Off does?
Sure. So our goal basically is every month to host a fundraising campaign. That's sort of what we started with, like our MVP, if you will, for all the startup and techie developers out there. And so to that end, it's been, we pick something to fundraise. So far we've done live captioning twice. We've done attendance scholarships. And then we will put up a public fundraising campaign. We've used GoFundMe before. Now we're using YouCaring because they don't take a cut of how much we raise because it's specifically for charities. And the idea is just basically to get out the word. And so far, actually, stepping back a little bit, we kicked off in January officially. Mm-hmm. And in January, we did a very like closed fundraising campaign. It went straight to AlterConf. Nobody could see sort of the amount that was raised, the goal, who donated, nothing. And we learned a lot from that, mainly that you need exactly the opposite of that in order to generate like awareness and like interest. And so since then we used GoFundMe. Now we're using YouCaring, and it's like, it's been an awesome platform for us. Just talking about platforms for a second, like it's amazing how many people clearly donate just because their friends have donated, or like somebody on the list that they like want to keep up with has donated, and we'll take it. Like that sounds great to us. But also, I think it's definitely like a human motivating factor to be able to see the goal and see where you're headed. And so we live captioned about 2 months ago. We raised enough money to live caption UIConf, which is a conference that occurs in Berlin. Mm-hmm. And then we just at the beginning of first 2 weeks of May, we raised attendance scholarships to send alumni of Code 2040 to Layers, which is a design conference that happens during WWDC. Our goal was actually to raise enough scholarships to send 2 people, and we're sending 4 just because the support from the community was overwhelming.
Wow, that's really great. And Layers is terrific too. It's our
so good
GSHR. Yeah, and you spoke there last year.
I did speak there last year. I love to thank Jesse all the time because the beginning of the conference, first off, like most people didn't know me who was at that conference, right? It's like... Mm-hmm. Kicking off the conference was Susan Kerr, which she's going to bring out a ton of eyeballs, a ton of people, right. The original designer of the Macintosh. And you know, John Gruber was interviewing her immediately after. And then Maylee Ko, this incredible prototyper who worked on a killer team at Apple, spoke next. And then it was me. And it was me. And it was right before lunch. So it's like, like, if you're going to go to lunch and then not come back, like, that might happen. But, like, you're there. You're there because you saw Susan Kare, and you're probably going to maybe leave after if you were going to cut out, right? And so... got a lot of eyeballs on a talk that means a lot to me, and I just love Layers.
You killed it. That whole session was like, that whole day was incredible. Layers in general is awesome. That opening bit was just killer. So
I
good.
I appreciate that. As a spectator too, I just thoroughly enjoyed it.
Right. Yeah. I think I was standing with you in the crowd at one point. It's awesome. Is that talk up online?
Yeah, it totally is. It totally is. I think they posted it on Vimeo.
That's the classy video site.
That's what, totally agree. It's like, if you're a true artist, that's where you post your things at.
Yeah,
not with like all the pleons at YouTube.
Yeah,
it's like the Bing to Google search.
We put all the singles and stuff up on Vimeo too.
Bing still exists. Bing still going?
I think
it's powering Yahoo search.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
But no, you gave a terrific talk at Layers last year. So I really I encourage anybody to look that up, and if we can put a link in the show notes, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
But back to Sound Off. What do you hope to accomplish this year? Like, do you have a set of goals, or like is there some kind of low hanging fruit that you wish to be able to pick off?
I think for us, it's sort of proving out the concept. And so we started with conversations with Ash Dryden. In case anyone doesn't know, she runs AlterConf, which is an awesome conference that serves tech and gaming communities, underrepresented folks. She also runs something called Fund Club, which the idea is that every month people give $100 to Fund Club, and she guarantees that like it's going to go to something that's worthwhile in technology, right? And so in sort of like talking to her and conversations with her, like the idea for Sound Off came about. And I think for us, it's just sort of like proving out that this concept can work in our like niche of technology, and then like expanding it forward. And so far, like the outreach and the return and the support has been really awesome. And so for the rest of the year, we have a couple other things lined up. We're talking with OS Fields right now in Seattle about live captioning their conference. And then we're also talking to a new conference in Portland about providing childcare for them. And so those fundraisers would run in like July and probably September. And if I could just talk about live captioning for a second, like,
please,
I wrote
do.
About,
I was, yeah.
Right. Awesome. I would love to. I wrote about this in my blog because I just actually got back from Berlin last week. And as an able-bodied person, like, I didn't really know what live captioning meant, honestly. I just assumed that it meant like subtitles on a video. Like, I didn't have any concept of like what that would mean. I thought I wouldn't even notice it. And to go to the conference and see a screen on stage that had a live transcription of the talk as it was going, it was just an incredible experience. Like, it went from a screen that I glanced at almost, I don't want to say for novelty, but it's really easy as able-bodied people to take things that are so important to other communities and like trivialize them. And it went from something that I glanced at just to see like if the words matched to something that I consistently used like several times each talk. I mean, if I zoned out and like needed to get back into the flow of the talk, it was right there for me. If I couldn't understand someone's accent, it was right there for me. If I missed a word, it was right there for me. And it's one of those things where sometimes I think we go to conferences and we get used to like, oh, I'll just wait for the video. Like, I don't know. I'll just – and not having to do that was like an awesome – it just enriched the attendee experience.
Yeah, if I could do Singleton again, I would definitely try to go for that live captioning.
Absolutely.
It can hurt. It serves everybody better.
Mm-hmm.
There was no argument against it other than cost, but – you know, well, I mean, you guys are doing a great job in trying to support that kind of thing. But ideally, it'd just be great if conferences could somehow, sort of incorporate that into their base cost of doing business.
I totally agree. And so I feel like, you know, one of our goals beyond, you know, running these campaigns is absolutely to just expose conference organizers to these things that they might not be on their radar. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully, you know, next year, because I heard from so many attendees, other able-bodied folks who were like, do you see, like, this is amazing. I love it, right? And we're hoping that, like, next year when they're doing their planning, like, it's not something that they can leave out or not account for because people have this expectation that it's going to be there now.
It becomes table stakes.
Exactly.
Yeah, which is good. I do want to point out that it takes so much effort and time to organize a conference. It's not being frugal, or it's not for lack of caring that this isn't the table stakes. It's just for lack of not really realizing yet that this is a very important thing. I don't, you know, I've dealt with a lot of conference organizers in my time. I don't know of a single one that wouldn't want to embrace this concept. When you're putting on a show like that and it takes so much effort, you want people to be able to enjoy it. And the more accessible and the more open, and, you know, even if you're able-bodied, the more you can get out of a talk, the better. So I think this is an idea that will and can gain a lot of traction.
Well, that was the whole thing with apps too, in the history of apps, where in the beginning, you know, people developed and then they realized that design was important, and design became table stakes, and then marketing became table stakes, and accessibility was still something like, we really want it, but we'll do it next time because we have to ship. And now increasingly you can't do that next time. That just has to be one of the things that's there. And I think, you know, in general, accessibility is becoming that in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I appreciate you for saying that, Guy, because I certainly don't mean to imply that there's some sort of like,
oh, no, no.
Like, yeah, no, not at all.
No, no, I know you don't. I'm just, sure. I just want everybody to know that, like, look, everybody involved in this wants things to be better. They really do. And that's great. That's a golden opportunity. That's why Sound Off, I think, will do well, is that everybody that has any kind of stake in it agrees. You know, just it's just an issue of trying to get some traction and trying to build awareness. So definitely. Hopefully this helps a little bit, you know, and you guys have been doing an amazing job already.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So what else is up? You mentioned that you were, you know, having a lot of conversations, trying to line up a gig.
Can you just go to Apple and fix iCloud? Like iCloud Drive specifically?
Oh, God. I don't know that anyone can. That's a huge undertaking.
It's just a feature, I heard.
It's just a feature. Okay. Yeah, just like Dropbox is just a feature, right?
Yeah. Okay, so let's give some history. Ashley, you were at Dropbox up until what, 3 months ago?
Yeah, hasn't been that long already? I left at the end of February. Yes. So, yeah, I guess it's been like 2.5 months at this point. It's weird leaving a place that feels like very tied into your identity. Like, I felt like a lot of people knew me as like Dropbox engineer or like developer of Dropbox in some fashion.
That's a little unfair because, I mean, you've had a pretty long career, right? Like you were at Apple before you had Dropbox.
I sure was. I appreciate you for saying that. And then circa before Dropbox, between Apple.
It's unfair that you're the Dropbox person. But I think when you're at Apple, you know, the lid is on, so you don't get to say anything.
Especially then. I mean, now we're in this brave new world where like Phil Schiller's tweeting and
yeah. Who knows what happens? I don't know. Eddie Q's going to show up in his tidy whities.
Please.
Oh, flip flops in his tidy whity. That's
Eddie Q's. An image is going to linger.
And a Hawaiian shirt. He's got to have the Hawaiian shirt.
It'll be a like strength in numbers. It'll be like a warrior shirt. He likes to sit courtside at all the finals games.
Yeah. Well, good for him. Well, I would too. I'm not even.
No, right?
Yeah, but yeah, I totally do that.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say that you've become more vocal during the period that you're at Dropbox.
Absolutely. I think that's definitely fair to say. I mean, I gave my first international talk in Moscow at Dropbox. Yeah, absolutely. I was on more podcasts at Dropbox. I think that's easily fair to say. And it was hard to leave. The team there was amazing. My manager there was easily the best manager I've had. in my career. Yeah, it was hard. But I guess like the primary motivator for leaving is like I really wanted to build from scratch. Like earlier in my career, I got an opportunity to build from scratch. And I mean, like fresh out of school. And I barely knew it. Looking back, I like didn't know what I was doing at all. and I'm not sure that like, I don't know if it's one of those things that was like a good thing, you know, like I think there's a lot to be said for like being new and coming into a code base and like having to learn from the code base. So now, right?
I can't agree more. I've never been ready for the job that I get hired for. Like I'm always at it, like a fish out of water. That's the way it should be, right?
Like I agree. But sort of like looking back now, it's like I'd love that opportunity to like build from scratch again. And to be on the ground floor for all of those awesome decisions that you look back on in 5 or 6 years and think, what the hell was I doing? Like, why didn't we go with Git? Why did we go with like Mercurial? Like, just like those little weird, obscure things. But basically that was the motivating factor. Like you work at a company the size of Dropbox with like 1700 people. There's very few, if any, opportunities to sort of build from scratch or like right. own a product. And so it was just a mismatch in that regard. Also, it felt like all my friends and contemporaries keep talking about this Swift thing. And it's like, we weren't doing too much of that. It's like a 6-year-old app.
You were a frontline iOS engineer at Dropbox, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know about frontline, but nobody called me if like things blew up. Like we didn't have like a pager system or anything. But yeah, I was one of the iOS engineers actually working on the Dropbox for iOS app. When I joined, I think I was like 5, and we grew easily to 11 in my time there in like 2 years. And so, yeah, it's just when it's that, it's a very large app, and when it's that many people working on an app, if you want to make like a greater impact, I feel like you got to look elsewhere. You just do. So that was like the motivating factor, that and like getting to actually use Swift and work on Swift.
Okay. I'm trying to. Oh, screw it. Why?
Why? Why did I want to use Swift?
Yeah, no, I have a lot of. There could be a huge amount of preamble. But why? Yeah, why did that entice you so much?
If you're looking for someone to debate against, I'm the wrong person.
No, believe me, I'm not.
I think for me, it's purely Swift just like.
I think there's a lot of traction behind it. I think this is the thing to learn. I think that. Despite the differences to Objective-C and the sort of different way that you build software to suit the language, I really think that it's, you know, if not now, then very soon it's time to put all your bets behind Swift and just get on board. And so I asked why, not because I wanted to debate, but because I wanted to hear what you were excited about.
I gotcha. I think for me, it's about it being this new thing that I feel like my friends in the iOS world are using, pontificating on, have opinions on, and like critical analysis about. And so it feels weird when like you two are an iOS engineer, right? And like you feel like you can't like speak on that level because you just don't have experience with it, right? And that's like fine. Where you're at, but it's like, I don't know how many people are writing like blog posts about Objective-C right now, right? Or like giving talks on Objective-C right now. Maybe they're giving like talks on like the switch from Objective-C to Swift, but it feels like a relevancy question more than anything else. Like you don't want to get left behind. Like you want to be with everybody that's talking about Swift too. And be able to offer an opinion as well.
Okay. That's a great way of putting it. How has your experience been using Swift?
How's it been? I've enjoyed the experience of using it. The ramp up is real. It just is. Like there's that initial hurdle. I don't know if it's initial. It seems like to linger. A hurdle of like, honestly, people are always like, yeah, at the beginning it's slow. But it seems to still be slow. You know, it's just when you think in one language for years, it's hard to then to just like switch to Swift and for things to make sense. And as someone like fairly new to it, like only been doing it like a couple months, you spend so much time like looking up syntax or auto completing to like some sort of I'm trying to think, like the block length, like the inline blocks,
the closures.
Syntax. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then like it doesn't work and it's confusing because like Xcode told you to do it this way, but then like the compiler's still complaining.
That Objective-C blocks have a particularly great syntax.
No, just they don't have great syntax at all.
Yeah.
But with Swift, it's just so easy to like remove everything. It's like, oh, you're not using like this? You could just take that out. Like, it's fine.
Great.
Yeah.
So just to sort of go back, what's your history with working with different languages? Like, where did you start?
Where did I start? I guess I started with C++, which was not the best.
Oh,
start.
God, I'm so sorry. Why are you doing this? Why?
I appreciate that.
Why are you in this career?
That's awful. I almost didn't make it into this career because of that. That's an appropriate response.
C++ has a lot of good features, but it also has all of the features, and you will hurt yourself.
I think I was like 10 or 11. I was in sixth grade. A friend gave me C++ in 21 days. And
that's actually a pretty good book. It's crazy, but a lot of people have learned how to program from that book.
Really learned how to program? I'm impressed.
They've learned how to do a bit of C++.
Okay,
because it's given them the catnip that you know started them on the trail.
I feel like if you have programming experience, C++ in 21 days is probably like an excellent.
No, it was
like yeah. Yeah. But if you don't,
It was a joke for me.
Oh, okay.
At the time. But I do know people who are actually good at what they do that started with that book.
Mm.
And, you know, so I'm not surprised to hear that. But it's a bit of a false promise. So,
yeah. Basically, like, we played video games together and I really wanted to make a game. So he's like, here's this book. Like, this is what all the game engines are based on. And, you know, I was such a type A kid that I, like, knew I was going to learn C++ in exactly 21 days. I was like, oh, I charted out on a calendar. I was like, I can't, like, I got to do a day in the book and a real, like, 24-hour day. Like, I can't mess this up.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
Just very anal kid. It was until I got to like, day 8, which was pointers. And I didn't understand pointers at all, like, at all. I still remember how they explained it. It was like this rectangle, this tall rectangle, and like they had an arrow pointing to what I think now was probably space in memory, and it was like, this is your pointer to the space in memory. And I was
the rectangle being the heap and the pointer, like the arrow being the, yeah.
Yeah. They like totally
it's
lost
it. It's a street address or a phone number. That's it. Like, just explain it like that and you'll be okay.
Variable, sure, no problem, but like pointers, what do you mean I'm pointing to the, like it just didn't compute at all.
It's a phone number or a street address. It's not a thing until you resolve it, until you actually go there or call that number. That token is meaningless, right?
That's a good point. I wonder how would you explain like optionals then? Like, was this a phone number? Is like Google Voice? Like,
how would I explain the optionals? I don't know. Immanuel Kant? I don't know.
Actually, I kind of like my Google Voice analogy.
Probably need a lot of philosophy.
So yeah, I didn't understand pointers, so I felt like I couldn't move on to the next day. So I kind of put that aside and started doing web development instead, which was a lot easier. No pointers. It's much easier. I made my friend like one of these terrible GeoCities websites. The idea, it was like a bargain. He like lent me his family's laptop. So I got to like sit on my sofa and watch TV while coding, which was amazing to me. And in return, I would make him one of these like terrible websites, just like animated GIFs everywhere.
Did you have an under construction gift?
I don't think I did. It was like a one-page homepage. Like, I don't think there were any links.
You totally missed an opportunity.
Oh, God. But he had enough, like, I don't know if you guys remember, but, like, the popular thing, especially for kids then, was, like, you had, like, a GIF that was a person, and it would, like, expand out into a whole, like, squad of people all dressed in, like, baggy clothes. It was nonsense.
Oh, yeah.
And so Like, it was full of that, and like the background was like blinking and stars and just terrible. He loved it. Needless to say, he absolutely loved the website. But it was fun. It was fun, but it, like, what I didn't really feel like what else I could do with that. Like, So sort of put that aside, played more video games, got a little older. I tried a bunch of things. Like, I didn't think I liked programming because I didn't understand pointers. So I tried to be like an animator. Like, I got 3D Studio Max, I got Maya, and I was like, this is how I'm going to break into the games industry.
Well, that stuff is confusing.
Yes.
Yeah. Look, if you've never used a 3D package, you get four views. You can change the cameras, but it's basically like top down, left and right. Is that even it? Front and back or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the fourth one is like a 3D one that you can move around. And that's it. Build something.
Yes.
It's a nightmare. It is like your brain has to be like the abstraction that you need in order to actually make anything in that kind of space is bananas. It's just crazy making.
No, absolutely. And I quickly realized that I actually couldn't draw. Like, that didn't – my mom and my grandma are like incredible artists, like can paint, can draw. That did not – it's not hereditary. It didn't pass on. And it just – I felt like there was like a creative side of my brain like missing when I was using that. But
A 3D package is very different from drawing.
Yeah. And every 3D package is different.
Yeah.
Like I found when I was using Lightwave, was that one of them? And Imagine. Yep. And Imagine, I totally understood Lightwave. I just couldn't get it all. And there was another one that was spline-based that just seemed like it was from a different planet. It was very confusing.
Well, that's how I felt. Like, 3D Studio Max at least had, like, a GUI. Like, there's a teapot. I can drag it out. I can maneuver it around. I can, like, figure out how to, like, tween an animation together. Maya was just nuts. It was, like, a screen. That's it. I think you had to, like, use key commands. Like, I didn't understand how to do anything in Maya.
But people swear by Maya.
That's what I hear.
I just, you know, it's the deep end of the pool.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, it'd be like if you sat somebody down in front of Xcode and be like, "Hey, make an app." It's like it's just not going to happen, you know.
Or Eclipse.
Yeah, maybe Eclipse.
Yeah.
Xcode is 3D Studio Max. I tried that. I knew I wanted to be in tech since I was a kid. Like, I got a Game Boy, I got a Super Nintendo. I just knew that technology was something I wanted to be a part of. But in terms of like what I was going to do, I just had no idea. So I just felt like I kept trying things like as I got older. And so in high school, I ended up taking C++. Finally, I did understand pointers or like understood them enough to be able to like do well in the class.
Right.
I also took Java, which at that time was an AP class, and did not like Java. I still don't like Java to this day.
Yeah. Java blows. It's Java.
I think for me, like, because coming out of high school, I still didn't want to be a programmer. And I actually didn't go to college for computer science. I think for me, a lot of what I saw being done with programming, unless it was like a video game, was like, you know, it was like make a calculator or like make these GUI games that weren't that exciting or fun. I'm not really into like just making tools and like coding projects just to like push the technology or see what it can do. Like I think one of the things that really drew me to iOS is the fact that like you can like physically like touch and interact with your interface and it looks pretty. And nothing I saw when I was in high school like really resembled that. I think the closest was like there was a API for Java where you could like you could actually have like a visual display, but like even that I just wasn't that into. And so I, you know, despite like doing well in those coding classes and enjoying them, like I definitely came out of high school not wanting to code. And so I didn't take computer science. Instead, I took something called, information management technology, I think it was. I think that's the official title. The idea being like it's supposed to be this combination between technology and business. And then what that really manifested into is like I took a bunch of networking classes. So I took like wireless classes and like made like network diagrams. I took like wired Ethernet classes and I like enjoyed that. I thought that was cool. I liked like the Cisco iOS, like actually hopping on a computer and like programming the switches or the routers. That was fun to me. There was also a lab in my school that had, that was doing tests for this magazine called like Network Management. And there, it was like kids, graduate students who were actually doing like these tests, running these tests in a lab for this magazine, which I thought was awesome. I used to just hang around the lab. So my first internship was at Goldman Sachs, and I really thought that I was going to like go do networking. That would like be my profession. And then I, well, I got,
yeah.
Yeah. And then I got to,
they use it a lot. Like that's their business. Like basically their business is founded on amazing networking and algorithm stuff.
No, absolutely. Amazing algorithm stuff. I mean, it's,
yeah, I know that's a silly way to say it, but I mean,
no, it's
like the, yeah,
the super the trading algorithm, literally like their entire, it feels like they're, I mean, from my perspective as like a 19-year-old working there, it was like their entire business was built on how quickly they could connect to the trading. And so literally like all of the top investment banking companies had hardware on the, like at the trading network center.
Right.
And then
the speed
on
of electricity going down a wire is not fast enough.
Yeah. No.
They need to be closer.
Exactly. Which is insane, right?
Yeah.
And then like having equipment at the New York Stock Exchange would be like, you have to be on site, right? And then the other part of their business was like hiring as many talented coders and programmers and like people who are very good at algorithms to make the trading apps and like be able to make these incredibly quick trades and like judge whether or not to, you know, buy or sell. And that felt like that was their entire business. And it's actually incredible. I don't think enough people, I live in San Francisco now, I don't think enough people in Silicon Valley like recognize the like technical prowess of these financial institutions that are in Manhattan. It's really like incredible.
You think your self-driving car algorithm is fancy, you should see the trading stuff.
Well, no, I totally agree with Ashley. The crazy stuff that goes on in New York for trading is like, it's bananas. It's beyond pretty much anything. I'm not sure it's great in that you can crash the market in about half a second. But you know, they're doing some like very, very, very incredibly complicated work. So
and it's incredible incentive to win.
Here's the thing. I think that the way you define win is, you know, it's based on the money return, and rather than actually creating something that people can help to make their lives better with.
Yeah,
definitely.
So I don't know if it's a win, but it's certainly some very high tech stuff.
Absolutely.
It's like working at an arms manufacturer. Like yes, your missile hits the target 100% of the time. Still kind of a bummer, you know.
Your microtransactions has accrued, you know, $1 billion more than your competitors.
Right. I don't know why I'm being so negative.
I mean, it's a real thing. Like, I know it's a naive interpretation, but like, you look at The Big Short, and it's like, this is all extremely depressing.
Right? Yeah. Well, that's why I watched that like a week ago. So.
Yeah, it's real. It's like, no, there's no winners in this.
Well, it just feels like you've let machine learning take over, and there's no real like it just feels like a pessimistic take on the human condition.
Well, once machines start buying and sorting stuff, they're just playing against each other. And isn't the whole notion to be like trying to gauge like how people are going to react or buy a product? Or
put that Google Go bot on it and it just starts beating everybody, and I don't know where we go from there.
Anyway.
That's why I actually got out.
Long story short, so 19, you got out of there.
Yeah, so I basically did an internship there, and let's see, the actual internship was amazing. It's really awesome people. It wasn't for me. That's where I realized that you really have to love the business that you're supporting, even if you are supporting it or you're like tech side of it, like you still need to really be into it. And I really wasn't into finance. And it was also that summer that I realized that networking really wasn't for me. Like, networking at school or in the lab that we had was different than networking at Goldman Sachs. You're not like plugging in Ethernet cords and configuring switches and routers. You are writing like a list of requirements for someone else to do it who's actually at like the network center. And so it's like this very abstract thing. And I wasn't into that. Like I wanted to actually be doing things or making things. And so it was that summer that I realized, I'd already done 2 years of school and I realized I want to make things and I don't want to do hardware. Oh shit. I need to look at this programming thing again. it was just like clear as day. Like this is what I have to do if I want to enjoy like my full-time job.
I love that. I think that's a great motivator. Like, You cast your net pretty wide, you tried a bunch of stuff, and then you came to understand it. Like, no, like, this is what I actually want to do.
I love that you say that, because it took me a long time, I mean, relative to my age, right? Sure. To grapple with the fact that, you know, I could have been one of those, like, 11-year-old kids who starts real young, and it's just, like, incredible, because they've already done, like, 10 years by the time they're 20-something.
Like, I'm sorry to everybody who is those people. I'm joking, but no, coming to it it's not trial and error, but through experimentation. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of value in that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I have learned to embrace it and like respect my journey and like however long it took me. Right, I don't need to be on like some abstract like idealized version of like the road to, I don't know, whatever your profession is. It's kind of cool too, because I get to speak to like all these variety of things that I've like dabbled in. Maybe I don't have like the depth in, but like this breadth of experiences. So basically I went back to school and was like, all right, crap. my options were like, you know, switch to computer science, stay longer. And I was like, no, not doing that. Like I'm getting out of here as soon as I can. And I knew I wanted to go to abroad as well. So that's a semester away. And they don't really offer like very technical mm-hmm. classes when you do something like that. So basically my solution was like, I'm going to pick up a minor in computer science just so I can take the classes that I want to be able to take. Cause I know like what's important at this point, like data structures, algorithms, and discrete math, which whatever, they want you to take that. I'm not sure how. I think there's one thing I swear to God I picked up in discrete mathematics, and it's like this like true false proof we did, and it was like the most basic thing, like the first couple weeks of class, and it was just kind of cool to see like, you know, not true, okay, that's false. Like anyway, the rest of the class, whatever.
Like basic logic, like
yeah, extremely basic.
Two extremely wrongs basic. Don't make it right.
It's not. It's something extremely basic, and I think it was like. Like all I took away from that class, like the rest of it, I don't know. So I basically like piled on as many classes as I could and then spent the next school year trying to get an internship that was actually in development. Eventually, like a friend I met that at Goldman Sachs when we were interning, like he got an internship at Apple. And so I was abroad in Spain, like trying to get an internship. And so I asked him to connect. Yeah, it was a mess. So I asked. I know.
I was abroad in Spain.
It was, you as know, many variables.
Like tapas, having a little bit of wine. Yeah, sleeping a bit.
It's like 8-hour time difference to the West Coast, like trying to make this thing work. I remember I had interviews like at Google and at Apple, like in my, because we stayed with host families. It was really funny, actually, now that I think about it. But basically, he introduced me to his recruiter. It was pretty late in their recruiting cycle. And they just happened to have, like, an opening, I kid you not, like, in networking. Like, apparently some manager said he needed an intern, went on vacation, came back, and said, where's my intern? And, like, they had forgotten. So I wound up interning in, it's called, like, the Network LAN team. At Apple. And I was like, sure, great. Cause like that was obviously what most of my experience was in, like my collegiate experience, my previous internship. It's really hard to get an internship when your previous history like doesn't actually match up with that. So Yeah, so I interned with the network team. My first assignment, I kid you not, was it was like day one. I went down to Cupertino and had a note like on my desk that said like, come up to Moscone. Like, come up to Moscone West. And I lived in San Francisco as an intern. Took the bus down to Cupertino and then they sent me back on the train to San Francisco. And yeah, I met my on-site manager at WWDC and wow. It was like, that was my first assignment. It was WWDC's in a week. We need to set up the network for it. So like, get to work.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah, I appreciate
really?
It. Yeah.
Nice work because people used to really complain about that.
I don't know if I can say his name, so maybe I won't give him a shout out. But my the network manager there, yeah. Incredible guy. He's been doing it easily like the last 16 years, I think. Well before it was an issue, right? Like Spectrum was an issue, like running out of literally.
Yeah, like right. I'm not blaming anybody.
Yeah,
but Apple sells a lot of devices, and the people at WWDC are going to bring like three of them, and they're all going to try to get on Wi-Fi.
Three so easily.
That's going to hurt.
You get people there that are like, they got their laptop going, they have their Wi-Fi going, they have their iPad, right. iPhone, but they're now their watch. It's like, it's insane, like the technical challenge that it is. And yeah. You talk about jumping into the deep end, like the manager who runs the network there for every WWDC, like it was very similar, but he actually ran it. Like his first job when he joined Apple was like, hey, go run the network at this tech conference. And you know, it wasn't as big as WWDC is today, right? But it was still like, go run the network for this major event that gets a ton of eyeballs and like go figure it out.
Well, at least he wasn't the guy in the boat behind Larry Ellison's boat with the satellite dish making sure Larry got internet.
yeah. But just the amount of radio, I mean,
it's nuts.
How many radios are there? Like, holy crap. It's bananas.
So many. It's
like what? Presidio sits what? 1,500? Couple of thousand,
easily.
Maybe?
Easily, yeah.
Well, remember Steve Jobs famously asking people to turn off their MiFis for the FaceTime demo?
For good reason.
Yeah.
For good reason, yeah. It's just limits of the tech.
Not easy.
Yeah. At some point you just run up against physics. Like it's not
exactly.
It's just but I loved it. So I was not an Apple, jumping back a little bit, I was not an Apple like fan growing up. I wasn't like against Apple, but I played video games. Like the best thing you could do was build a gaming PC. Who right. played video games on their Mac? Like that was such a weird thing. I certainly didn't know anyone.
You're going to hear from Syracuse.
I would read Maximum PC cover to cover like every month, like middle school and high school. I built gaming PCs with my buddies. Like Mac was just not in my purview at all. It really wasn't until I got that internship at Apple that I was like, I need to check out what this Mac thing is because I want to get into development. So like, what do they offer basically? And so I didn't know about Worldwide Developers Conference before I got there, which I know is kind of a weird thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a fascinating way to get into it. You know, maybe it's my own bias, but most people I know are kind of familiar with the way Apple works before they join up.
Yeah, I feel like in many ways I've played a lot of catch up, a lot of like, who is this Steve Jobs fella? And like, what did he do besides from like, I mean, I saw the movie Pirates of the Valley.
The guy's name is Stan Jobs. Stan Jobs.
And there's right. people going, oh my God, why are you here? You don't know anything about Apple. You're supposed to have loved Apple since the moment you were born and always wanted to work here.
Luckily, people are really nice about it. Like we're right. It's like, oh yeah, go learn about this and like go watch his old keynotes and like you got to watch this seminal moment when he returned to Apple and you know he wasn't the CEO yet, but he was on stage answering questions and it was just a few months before he'd be back as CEO. And so now I feel like I've gone back and certainly I started then at my internship, like learning more about the history of Apple.
So wait, how did that land for you?
Sorry, what do you mean?
I mean, so you people tell you to watch this, and did you care?
Yeah, because I feel like
I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just curious. Like, so I'm weirdly tied to it. You know, I've followed his career for like a long time in Apple and tech in general. But if you're coming from the outside and somebody tells you to go watch some video where Steve Jobs, does a great presentation or yells at, not yells, but or like shuts down some kind of questions from developers, does that land with you in the same way that, you know, do you care? Or are you just like, oh, that's interesting, but I mean, it's not about what I'm doing day to day.
Sure. I think it's hard for me to think back like 7-8 years ago when I was like 20 or 21 and how I felt then. Like, I recently rewatched a bunch of his keynotes and, you know, just read Becoming Steve Jobs at the end of last year.
Yeah, that's a good book.
Very good book. And I know for me now, it's like, I love history just in general, right? And so certainly learning about the history of my platform, how it came to be, the design ideas and thinking behind it, like, I love that stuff. And so for me, it hit like, I'll never be someone that grew up with it, and that's okay. So I can't speak to like what it might mean for you. But I know for me, it's like, it's impactful. Like, I have fuller context now. Like, maybe initially when those videos or whatever was sent to me at 20 and 21, it's like, okay, whatever. Like, I don't, whatever. Like, it means very little to me. But when you're curious about, you know, why later on about why the iPhone keynote is considered like the best keynote of all time, or why his three things with the Safari, right? The phone, the MP3 iPod, right? And like seeing them swirl together, like, that's showmanship. And so I think it came up for me a few years ago when I was trying to make my own talks. You know, the best advice folks gave me is like, go back and look at Steve Jobs' talks. Like, those are tremendous showmanship. You're talking about the way he delivers things, like just excellent timing. He talks slow. He doesn't care that the audience, like however many people are in the audience. He clearly knows his script, but he's not afraid to like go off of it a little bit or like make jokes.
Yeah, he'll
riff,
right? Yeah,
exactly. And so, you know, at 20 and 21, did it hit? Probably not. Probably more so when I started full time and transitioned into, because I didn't do network engineering full time. I sort of made it clear that I wanted to come on as a software developer, and they luckily allowed me to. But I think that my beginning was like, you know, you need to know some of this stuff because this is where Apple's design thinking comes from, and design is really important to iOS apps. And so that's where it ties in. And then I think a couple of years ago, it became again important because, you know, this is the showmanship that you should strive to achieve. And like here's how you handle like those. Like, honestly, I had a question like to a friend, like, how do I handle Q&A on stage? And it's like, what better example is when he returns and he's literally live telling these developers to ask him questions after he just killed like one of the technologies they love? Like,
yeah, OpenDoc, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think it's come up in those regards. And it's just about context, right? Like, as long as it's the context is like relevant to where you are in your actual life, like, I feel like it's going to be just as impactful.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm glad you say that because, you know, I admire a lot of his presentations. And in the back of my mind, maybe I worry that it's a cult of personality thing. So having somebody come to it fresh is a little bit reassuring on that front, right? Like,
oh, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Because like the community can feel very insular and like a lot of people just sort of agreeing. I got you.
Right. Yeah. Like, I really don't think that's healthy. But if somebody can come in and be like, oh, this actually makes sense and I understand what the why it's appealing, why this message has landed with so many people, I think that's good in general.
I think when so many people are like, I don't want to say devout, but for lack of a better word, like very
devout
astute followers.
It's fair. Yeah. Okay. Devout. Let's just go with devout. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. So devout, if not astute followers of Jobs, like as an outsider, you have to come in with this sort of like, you just want to know what people are seeing and like be able to feel it too. Right. And so I think a lot of it is like searching to figure out what other people mean. And then because you're an outsider, you can have like a more critical analysis of like, is this nonsense or like, is this actually something that's worth
right.
understanding.
Yeah. And I honestly think that that's the most important thing. Just going on questioning is never good. It's just, it can't lead to anything good. So yeah, being a devout, unquestioning follower of whatever Steve Jobs said just leads you down the path of irrelevance, frankly. I mean, the number of times that Apple and Steve changed their minds on any given subject is like innumerable. They do it all the time.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny you say that, like, about being an outsider, because it's like I have at times been like, man, like I wish I had been a fan when the Apple iPhone keynote dropped, or or I'd actually been on the earnings call when he made the quip about never making like a smaller iPad because you would need to file fingers down. Like,
right. Yeah.
Like getting that stuff live must have been gold. I can only imagine.
Yeah, but whatever. I mean,
we're sitting there using one at a time, just totally messing with people.
Yeah. But so you said it had inspired the way that you put a talk together.
Mm-hmm.
How do you put a talk together? Like when you you're often asked to speak publicly. Do you have a process or a formula or when you're asked to put a talk together, what happens in your mind? Do you panic?
Terror. Yeah, absolutely.
I do. I do. Frankly, I do. And then what?
I think the initial stages are like terror, fear,
denial, bargaining.
You're like, yeah, you're like, I haven't done anything. I don't know anything. Everything I know, other people know.
Pretender syndrome.
Yeah. People know so much more than me. They're going to think I'm so junior. Like, you run through all of like the insecurities you could possibly deal with. And then when you're done with that, because it won't last forever, it's like, all right, well, I need to commit to this. Okay, I've committed. Well, now it's time to like show up. Now it's time to like do something. And so for me, I think what works for me, or what seems to be working, or I'm probably like still formulating my process, but usually it's like I sit down and spend like half a day, if not a full day, just like coming up with topics. And it could be anything. The talk I really like giving is called Humanities X Technology. And looking back at my notes, because I keep everything, I'm like a digital hoarder. I can see how my initial like, you know, text edit of topics, five of those ended up going into this talk, right? And being a whole talk within itself. So it's literally like everything. It's like, what do I think about programming? Or how to be a programmer, like just anything you can come up with off the top of your head. Nothing can be wrong. And then sort of looking at that list and thinking like, would I be interested? How can I expand on this topic? How can I expand on this topic? And am I excited once I expand on this topic? And like, I'll actually try to write a few like narrative thoughts, maybe like bullet points. Like this is sort of like the narrative arc of this talk. And then the ones that most interest me, like sort of make it to the next stage. Then I usually like talk to a friend of mine who helps me edit and get his opinion and any insights or advice he might have to offer. And it depends what type of talk it is. So like lately, I really like experiential talks. I just find them so much more interesting than dull, boring tech talks.
Sure.
And actually, Guy, it was at Singleton, like Alan Pike's talk at Singleton.
Yeah, man.
Killer.
Be good. Yeah.
We need to link that in the show notes because I've told Alan before. It was actually great because at Layers, he got to see what I feel was inspired by his talk, which was Humanities X Technology. And it was great to like...
Both great talks, by the way. Yeah.
I appreciate that. But it was great to like have him and his wife come up and like really enjoy it because I'm like, you don't understand. Like I sat like at my laptop, like studying his talk. I love sports. In sports, if people don't know, like in order to prepare for another team, people watch game tape. In order to get like tendencies and like see what people's typical game plan is. And so literally with Alan's talk, I just like watched it like over and over and over. And then like, honestly, and then like broke it down into, because I think one of the fascinating things, and hopefully this is interesting for people who haven't seen it, is that Alan starts with a he just starts with like an anecdote, right?
Yeah.
And then he talks about the idea of, and then he fits that anecdote into the idea of like maximum viable product. And then he spends the rest of the talk defining maximum viable product. But he does it in these nonlinear ways. Like mm-hmm. he talks about the best sushi person and how that guy gets the best rice guy and the best like seaweed guy and just like the best people and how this sushi chef has figured out a niche where people are willing to pay top dollar and he has like exploited it, right? And then that feeds into another story about I think it was Al Gore's app, the app on global warming and how like beautiful that app is and just like
inconvenient truth app. Yeah,
exactly. And then he ties that in with like his own story about trying to build a product that was successful and then trying to expand on it and building a product that nobody wanted. And this all leads to why Apple made the Apple Watch and people wondering why Apple would go into the watch category. And it's because, well, people are willing to pay top dollar for a product like that. But on surface, none of that seems to fit together. Like and watching it back, I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. And so I've sort of realized that it's like, it's about keeping that thread throughout the talk. And it's about like thinking about how you want people to feel. Like talks aren't dumps of information. It's about taking people on like a journey with you.
I think maybe there's some logical leaps, but very few emotional leaps. You know what I mean? Like the emotional arc is consistent.
I think that's a good point. Yeah.
And there's a couple of bullet points that are they're there to serve the purpose of the talk, which is effectively an emotional one at the end of the day.
No, exactly. And you know, the one trick a friend pointed out is like you don't want to over explain things to people. You know, you want to like tell them something, have them guess what the next thing is, and then show it. And it feels like a magic trick to people. People love like, oh yeah, I thought you were going to get to that, you know? And so the next step after, like, I guess I figured out a topic or something that I think might work is like, you know, trying to literally come up with slides based off of things that I know, doing the research for things that I don't know that might fit in. And then you're like the entire time you're trying to think like, how do I want people to feel? How do I want people to feel? And it's hard. It's a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, making people feel things is difficult because everybody's different, right? Like, how do you communicate that? It's a tall order.
Yeah, and I feel like for our little corner of the tech industry, it's like Apple, like. Yeah. An anomaly in terms of like people who, in terms of like coming to Apple sort of later. And so,
that's good.
One easy way to connect people is like, you know, talk about something that Apple has done. It's like instinctively the room like gets it, just kind of.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's a common touch grant, right? Mm-hmm. Touchstone. Yeah. So, one other thing I want to talk to you about is you're independent now, right? So you have a lot of conversations with potential clients. How does that go? And how does your experience sort of support your conversations with the potential clients?
Those conversations are a funny thing because you're sort of doing this dance with a client who, you know, wants someone to do work. You want to get paid the rate as the contractor, you want to get paid the rate that you feel like is deserved. And then it's like this weird back and forth. I find that a lot of clients think they want contractors, but they really want employees. They want contractors dressed up like employees. And what I mean by that is like, they sort of want to like bring them into, the culture of the company, the culture or culture of the company, overly explain the app. Like there's a lot of easy ways to like waste time with those conversations if they end up stopping at rate. Like rate can be such a just like wall to anything proceeding. It doesn't matter if we go any further because we're so far apart on rate. And so I think for me, it's an interesting thing. It's like people know that you're available or know that you have some availability. And so maybe they will engage with you under the auspices of wanting a contractor, but really they're trying to hire you in the back of their head, or they're trying to get you contract to hire. And even in the face of evidence of you saying like, no, like I really just want to stick with contracting for right now, it's like, no, they, in the back of their head, they still think they're going to get you to commit full time. And so I don't know, it's this uncomfortable dance. How that manifests sometimes is like, sometimes people will quibble about rate and then instead offer me full-time positions or offer me, like to have a seat at their table and be like head of their mobile. And it's like, how did we get there? I was just going to like individually contribute a couple days a week to you. Like you had this in the back of your head.
Right.
And it's weird. It's uncomfortable because it's people literally will reject your rate. Like, yeah, I'm in the Bay Area. It's a high cost of living. There's just no way around it, right? And so you talk to some places and they're like, oh, well, I can pay this in Argentina or this in Lithuania or this like somewhere else, right? And true, you can. Like, please go for those places. But it's like they don't want the conversation to end there. Then they want to try to hire you. And it's just like a mixed message. It's like, I'm not worth this rate, but then you want to bring me on full time in a higher position. Like, it doesn't match up.
It's hard to make heads or tails out of that. It seems like it's a net benefit to be in the Bay Area, but you can, in theory, hire people from all over the world, right? So.
Yeah, and so I think one of the things I've learned is like, stick with Bay Area companies. They know what the cost of living is. Stick with funded startups as opposed to like bootstrap startups. Unless I want to like go on full time, because it's probably just going to be a rate mismatch. And then I've started actually reaching out to VC firms, because they have this great network where they have invested in startups and companies who probably need engineers. And so it can be like a really great match that way. But contracting is really like a feast or famine thing. It really is. Like, you either like have a contract and things are amazing and it's like the best setup in the world, or you are coming to the end, as I am, or don't have one and you're like, am I employable? Like, will I ever work again? Like, it's very easy to get these like dark, depressing feelings.
Yeah.
Even in the face of evidence of like, no, I could probably get a job, like things will be okay, right? But it's so crazy how easy it is to turn to that.
Let's go ahead.
I was gonna say, you trade one set of problems for another. Like, whenever you are full-time, there's such an attraction to being freelance, and then when you're freelance, you look back and going, I didn't need to have to worry about what my next job would be.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, you're an accomplished developer. Do you feel that you're happy being independent with all the hustle, or would you prefer to work at a company that's more established, even if it's like VC funded?
I feel like I haven't given it a real try, to be honest. Like, right. I feel like I'm only, like, it's too early to make that call that I want to go back full time. Because it's only been a couple months.
I'll tell you, you're totally right. All of your concerns are totally right.
Okay.
No, it can be nail biting.
Mm-hmm.
It can be rewarding if you like to work on a bunch of different things at once. For me, just working on one thing all of the time was, that gets kind of, gets a little old.
Mm-hmm.
So contracting offers you the opportunity to jump into other projects and products where you can contribute, but you're not stuck doing the same thing all of the time. Is that something that you're interested in?
No, absolutely. I feel like in my career, I've only worked on like maybe four apps, tops. Because you can spend a couple of years just working on a single app at one company. And so for me, there are entire areas that I have never built an app in. There are entire like sections of the store that, you know, right. I've just never touched those APIs. And so the most appealing thing about contracting for me is, you know, one, you could set up your schedule part-time, which I love. It affords me time for sound off and just talks and other projects.
As a pro tip, try to wake up at a real time and try to go to bed early.
You got it.
It's way too easy to do the opposite, and it's not good. 5 a.m. is a beautiful time of day to go to bed.
5 a.m.
Don't get me wrong, but, you know, not very healthy. But yeah, so the flexibility is a huge boon. I guess the question I'm trying to ask is, do you prefer variety or, focus is the alternative to that. Not that you can't focus on what you're doing at the time, but I mean, there's two things, right? It's like, do you want to wake up in the morning and find something different that you can, a different problem that you can address? Or do you want to wake up in the morning and keep plowing into, like a field of experimentation that you can refine into being like perfected?
I guess the real issue there is I don't feel like I've found the thing that I would want to just like chip away at constantly. Like there's been no exciting either startup or project where I'm like, oh, this is it. Like this is what I want to spend the next couple of years on.
That's a good answer. Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate that. honestly, because I feel like I'm still figuring this out. There's a friend of mine who's there's actually two designers that are unavailable. Unavailable. I don't know what I meant by that. There are two designers that are contractors that are friends of mine. We all interned at Apple. They stayed longer than I did, quit within like the last 2 years. And we're all like in our late 20s and just kind of like figuring out what the hell we're going to do with our lives. And so we provide a great support network to each other. Sometimes it's just talking. It's like we're in our homes or like at coffee shops. It's nice to just like talk to someone. A lot of this like mind state is like, I think through conversations with them and like, yeah, just trying to figure out what we're doing with ourselves. I was talking to a friend of mine about the fact that like when you don't have a full-time job, you spend so much time thinking about like the existence of life. Like, who are you? How do you fit into this world? What am I? And it's weird because when you have a full-time job, you're so in the day-to-day. Sometimes you don't have time to think about longer-term goals. So it's just weird. Right,
which goes both ways, frankly. It's nice that you don't have like an existential terror every time you wake up. Yeah. That's nice. But at the same time, I think you get wrapped up in the day to day at a full time gig. And that has its own mental tax, right? Like if you want to look at it that way, like where does your mind go? Is it, some kind of existential dread?
No, exactly.
With you know, day-to-day stuff, or is it like being part of a job or a company where you're overly troubled maybe about how coworkers or management is treating you and the state of the project with regards to the rest of the company? Both of these are just going to eat your mental energy.
Mm-hmm.
So
I feel like part-time contracting is like the sweet spot of being half in one mindset and half in the other. Being able to work on what other projects you need to work on. I think there's something too, like, you know, these are the couple days I work, and when I'm working, it's like a deep dive on whatever project I'm on. I'm not thinking about other things. It's like, this is my focus time. So I feel like it hits the sweet spot of all of those things.
Yeah, you do seem like somebody that would be just all in. I get the sense that you'd be just pretty dedicated to diving deep on a given problem.
Zero to 100.
Well, you're pretty much 100 all the time.
Zero to speed limits.
Zero to speed limits.
Yeah.
That was very responsible of you, Renee. Thank you.
Zero to
speed. That's actually, I have to give credit where it's due. That's my boss's saying, and it's mostly Tesla inspired. You can get arrested speed. Really quick.
I bet.
Do you have any goals?
Do I have any goals?
I know. That's like such a shitty job interview kind of question. But I mean, like, hello, Ashley, where do you see yourself in 5 years? I don't mean that. But I mean, you've been employed by great companies recently. And you've set out on your own. Is there a path that you're hoping to follow? Or are you just kind of seeing where the wind blows and setting your sail? Yeah,
it's a mix. It's usually like, sorry, yeah. Oh no, yeah. Doing good. Go what were you saying? No, keep going.
No, I stopped. Are you setting yourself and doing good work? Is what I said.
Okay. I think for me it's a mix. Like I like again, I'm still that type A kid I was in sixth grade, and so for me it's a constant like setting of goals, and I'll be happy to list some of them. But then being okay with life happening.
Okay, that's healthy because that's going to happen.
I'm working on it. Yeah, it's an ongoing struggle. I don't know. Just being okay with like how things actually turn out. And so like some of my goals are I just want fulfilling work, right? And so I'm advising a startup right now. And that's cool cuz it it's nice to like go through the motions of having a startup or just like having an idea and figuring out how to try to make a business out of it without having to actually do the work. and like getting to flex some of those same like brain muscles and then figure out like solutions to problems. And I think it's also like a nice little reminder that like, oh, okay, yeah, I could do this. Like I could figure out these problems. Mm-hmm. One of the design friends that's free, like, dream would be like we come up with something during WWDC and we start working on it, we spend 6 months on it and like release it at the end of the year. That would be incredible.
What platform?
It would be an Apple Pencil app that works on the Apple TV.
How did you know? We'd love to make an iOS app together. Just because I want more app experience and what designer doesn't want to see their creation come to life, right?
Right.
But I think for us, it's like figuring out something that is exciting to both of us. And that's sort of like the limiting factor there. And so we're open, but you know, it's okay. It's okay that like it hasn't come to us in the past like month or so.
That's the most rewarding work you can do. Working with a designer, or it's amazing. You will always be stretched in terms of what you can do, and I honestly feel that, like, you know, the job of a programmer is to make tools so that other people can do their work more, enjoy themselves, and sitting with somebody who has a goal in mind of exactly what they want is just the best.
Yeah,
definitely. And so in many respects, it's trying not to feel bad about maybe I've wasted that because we haven't built something yet. We've only like sketched out things and
yet, Ashley,
further.
Yet.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Renee. But yeah, honestly, that's one of the things we had to work through. It's like, it's okay that we didn't do something already. You know, a lot of times in this industry, there's such a pressure to do things quickly and do things just like have a constant stream of new material.
No, I'd reject that. Just do good work. Just, you know, keep your eye on the prize and just do good work that you believe in.
I appreciate that.
I'm being nice. I'm not usually nice, but yeah, honestly, I honestly
upsets him so much to be nice.
No, I really do think that's, you know, just pumping stuff out does nobody any good.
Mm.
Take your shots.
It's just a blip on like somebody's spreadsheet. Don't worry about that. So.
I agree. It's like creativity takes time.
Right.
And on my
things.
Best days, I remember that. But what were you saying, Rena?
Make epic things.
Make epic things. Real hard as ship. Let's just say all of the expressions we can come up with.
Make epic things that ship. That you've stolen from other artists.
Real artists copy. Yeah, and then as always, like just gaining varied technical experience. And so I think that's one of the reasons I want to contract. Just get that variety of experience building and shipping different kinds of products. I also think when you are a contractor, you get to work with some of the open source tools. And there's so many now that people have either remade in Swift or made new in Swift that I want to try out. So let's see. Later this year, I have more talks. So let's see. WWDC is next week, or WWDC is happening. I don't know when this podcast is going out. But let's see. I'm going to Layers, which will be great because I will get to hang out with the folks from Code 2040 who we've given attendance scholarships and sort of like make sure they're okay and introduce them to people.
Yeah. Yes. And again, it may be too late to buy tickets, but if it is, just buy tickets anyway. Just it's such a good conference.
Or you
buy
can also
futures and Layers tickets.
You can also contribute one. Like if you can't go yourself, you can buy a ticket for somebody else. I forget what they call it. It's like a scholarship program.
It's a scholarship. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Definitely. Yeah, Jesse does an amazing job. I've run a conference. Jesse does it better.
She can run anything. She can just run anything.
Yeah.
She has John Hodgman coming to this year's Layers. That's like a real celebrity. Like what?
Well, he just types like Hodge into her messages and he shows up.
Yeah. No, it's good.
I'll be at Layers. I'm supposed to MC AltConf or a part of it or something. I don't know any of the details yet, but hopefully I will be there one or two of the days. Introducing speakers and making funny quips, hopefully. Let's see.
It always sucks when your job is to be funny because
I know. Just like everybody's like, shut up, just move on to the next person, whatever.
Yeah.
let's see. I just spoke at UIConf in Berlin, and then so that talk's coming out on YouTube soon. And then I am doing a keynote at 360 iDev, which is happening in August in Denver.
Nice. Cool.
So I'm going to be extending humanities and technology and making it into like double the time. Some of the thinking I have behind that is explaining how people can go about introducing the humanities into their technology.
I think that's a great topic.
Thank you.
And frankly, I think essential and kind of in a way at the root of what this show tries to be is that, you know, technology is one thing, but ultimately it's about serving people, right?
Absolutely.
People behind the code.
Yeah. And then I'm also speaking, I'm doing another keynote at Strange Loop, which is in September. Similar topic. So I'm excited about that. That's in St. Louis.
That's really cool.
The Ashley World Tour.
The Ashley World Tour. Yeah, speaking has brought me to some incredible places. Like I couldn't be happier, and I'm just more excited for what's going to happen in the future.
Well, you're very good at it. So please keep that up.
Yes.
We're all richer for hearing you and your writing too.
Front row fans.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the middle back.
Middle back.
Just, only because you came
just
late.
Just get a better view. Yeah, I came late. Get a better view. Yeah. So where do people find you online, Ashley?
You can find me at my Twitter handle, which is AshleyNH. I also have a blog at AshleyNH.me. And those are the two main spots. And then, you know, DM me if you want my PlayStation Network name. I have a PS4, so now I'm super excited and, like, ready to share and, like, meet people on that.
I gotta buy a PS4.
You got to.
And a VR headset.
You'll be my first pal.
I've been telling people it's the new golf, like, honestly, for our industry.
Wow. Like, yeah, you get together, you play a little bit of Destiny, and you're
Yeah. And then you make pals with all these like cool people in our industry. It's pretty awesome.
That's funny. Yeah. Well, cool people and, you know, Syracuse.
Ouch.
That's not nice.
Oh, he did. Whatever.
Accidental.
Yeah. Love that guy. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. Last year we did a WWDC thing together. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was awesome.
Maybe this year we can pick that up.
Yeah.
We'll That'd try be to great. Get a gang together and like hear what you have to say.
That'd be really cool.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Guy, where are you on the internet?
I can't wait to see you like next week. Where am I on the internet? Yeah. I'm at GT on Twitter and very occasionally at kickandbear.com for the writing stuff. And I have an app called Napkin, which is on the Mac App Store, which I only mention because Renee hates it when I don't.
Yes, because I use that app every day.
It's still on the Mac App Store.
Yeah.
That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
after Dub Dub, we'll pick that thread up.
Well,
absolutely.
Hang on. Just wait. Okay.
Just wait.
Okay.
Just wait. I have a feeling that before this podcast is released, there'll be some kind of news.
Yeah.
Some foreshadowing. Ooh.
Dum, dum, dum.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Ashley.
No, thank you guys. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, you're the best. Thank you so much. Yeah.